Thank you very much. Of course, I want to thank the organizers, and I also want to thank the Fields Institute. It's always a pleasure to be here. So I wanted to talk about, you know, extended affinity algebras, and then I realized that most of the audience wouldn't know what I'm talking about. But I also wanted to talk about torsors and reactive group schemes, and I realized that most of the audience probably wouldn't know what I was talking about either. And then I ran the risk of giving a talk that actually wouldn't mean much. So I decided to give a talk that is maybe general, based on examples. And of course, when you do that, you run the risk of not pleasing anyone, but I'll take the risk. But my plan is to outline some, begin with some examples and concepts, and then I want to introduce some concept that I think is quite important to the theory of ELAs over non-closed fields. And then I'm going to state two important theorems, and those are new. It's work with Philippe Gilles. And then at the end, I would like to give two applications, but probably we have time for only one of them. So let me begin. So these are the usual suspects that I need. So I want to talk about ELAs and multi-loops. I'm not really going to say anything except that these algebras and this is really mostly the work of Erhard-Neher. So it's a very interesting class of algebra. They contain the affine Kac-Moody algebras, as we shall see. And there is a piece here called the centerless core. And then you add a center and a derivation. And these things in here I'll call, the terminology is not mine, Li tori, even though they are a Li algebra. They have a form, some nice root space decomposition. So I can give you an example that actually is a counterexample to everything else that I'm going to say pretty much. But if you want, you can take a quantum torus, and you can take SLN of the quantum torus, and that will be an example of one of these objects. So the thing that is important to point out, which is quite relevant, is that if you look at the centroid, okay. So I'll leave this a bit. Okay. So is this okay? Yeah. And then I'll move to the next one. That the centroid of these guys is always a Laurent polynomial ring. And now I want to talk about multi-loops. So the idea now is the following. We take an n-tuple of automorphisms of G. We assume that they commute and that they are of finite order. So you take a common period for all of them. Okay. Well, because they commute, you can look at the action in the Lie algebra and just decompose it into simultaneous eigenspaces. So you fix some primitive entries of unity which are compatible with each other. And this is J I X. IJ, sorry. IJ. What the one? And of course, you see these guys repeat themselves. I mean, if you replace I1 by I1 plus M, this is not going to change. And then you put them all together, but you untwist them using the variables. So you add over all n tuples of integers. So this lives inside G tensor RNM, and in fact inside G tensor what I call RN infinity. And you see that it doesn't really depend on M, and this is the multi-loop algebra. So the things that you want to observe are that, of course, this is a Lie algebra. It's in general infinite dimensional. But the important thing to observe is that it's also a Lie algebra over Rn. It's not a Lie algebra over Rnm. But if you take any of these guys, you multiply it, say, by T2, then because of these things that they repeat themselves period M, you actually stay on the Lie algebra. So let me call this A. So you can view this as a Lie algebra over Rn, Lorentz in n variables. So you can do the tensor product with R and M. And the very nice thing that happens is that you always get the same thing. So the thing splits when you go to this extension. And for philosophical reasons, I'm going to rewrite this in this way. Okay. So the theorem that is relevant is a theorem that is due to Bruce Allison, Steve Berman, John Fonger, and myself, is that I told you that the centerless cores are algebras over Rn, or the centroid, in a natural way. So this could be a module of finite type or not. And it is a finite type if and only if, actually, the centerless core is a multi-loop algebra. So already you can attach an invariant to the Lie algebra, which is the G. The G is very easy to see that it's an invariant. It's actually usually called the absolute type of the ELA. So we have a new way of trying to understand these objects that are at the bottom of this interesting family of Lie algebras. So the next thing I want to do is very short, so just be here on the top, is to say a few words about forms, and I'll do so a form of G tensor Rn, or simply sometimes I'm going to say of G. What it is a Lie algebra L over Rn such that you can actually split it in the way we just did, but you put some restriction say an etal covering, or you can also use SPPF. It doesn't matter. I mean, one of these topologies that compensate for the weakness of the Sariski topology, and that's exactly what we have here. So the nice example is this LG sigma. You see this extension in here is actually a fine orbital extension. In fact, it's a Galois extension. So this gives us examples of forms. And I'll come back to forms in a second. Maybe this part will all. So the third part, I just want to say a few words about reductive group schemes. So there is two ways, and I'm going to do everything over R, which is our N. Now, already here, I'm not assuming anything about Kelvin algebraically closed, and this actually is relevant. Well, first of all, you know, I mean, there are two ways of looking at this. You can think of G it's an affine, these by definition are affine, so it's peck of something, and what makes it a group is that on RG you have a Hopf algebra structure. But it's difficult to think of these objects like this. It's much better to look at the functor of points. So this is something that goes from R algebras into groups. So S goes to GS, which is home RG into F. And this is, by definition, is a group, and this construction is functorial on S. And I mean, it's, you know, I'll just give you two groups that you're familiar with. The nth roots of unity. So this will take S into the excess in S such that X to the N is 1. Okay. And another group that we're going to use as an example is PGLN. And this takes S into the following. You look at the N by N matrix algebra with coefficients in S. So this is an associative S algebra. And now you look at the automorphisms. And reductive simply means that what is smooth, and the geometric fibers, if you know what it is, are, let me say, Borel reductive. Namely, you look at Borel's book, you see the definition of a reductive group over an algebraically closed field, and so you take any algebraically closed field extension of RG, so a morphism from RG into an algebraically closed field, and you do base change, which involves essentially doing the tensor product of RG, and what you get is a reductive group in the usual sense. Okay. So and again, this will be over R. So these objects, what they are, you see, G acts on itself on multiplication. And what a torso is something that essentially looks like that locally, but what locally is in this, in say in the tall sense. So what we have is we have a scheme over R. We have say a right action of G on E, and such that when you do the best change, what you get is G. This is for some, say, total cover. Because when characteristics here really doesn't matter whether we work with the tal or FTPF. Well, this is it's an isomorphism of S schemes, but it also preserves the action. So in here you had an action that is obtained by base change, and in here GS acts like right multiplication. So let me give you I'll give you an example in or several facts in a second, and H1RG is going to denote the isomorphism classes of torsors over R under G. These are what these things are. And realize that this is not a group, but it's just a set with a distinguished element. The distinguished element is a trivial torsor, namely G acting on itself by multiplication. Okay. So let me just mention some relevant facts. So this is part. This is like it's a philosophy thing, but the idea is that if you have, of course, object is undefined, but the philosophy is that if you have an object X over R, then objects Y over R such that X is the same than Y, but say locally at all, okay, these are classified by an H1. So the example that that we have, that we've actually discussed, is that forms of G tensor Rn, so algebras, the algebras over Rn that locally et al. Look like G tensor Rn, are classified by H1 Rn. And the graph of automorphisms, I should write automorphism of G tensor Rn, but this group actually comes from a group over K, so usually one denotes a thing like that. I can actually even tell you what the torsor is, but it's I'll do it quickly. I may get the action this is a left torsor, but so if you look at this thing, okay, really, it does look like OG. Because if you take any isomorphism, and I take any other isomorphism, then they differ by an automorphism of G tensor Rn. So this is exactly just G tensor Rn acting on itself by multiplication. So you may say, well, what is the point? The point is the following, that this guy certainly has an R point, the identity, it's a group. While this guy may be empty, there is no reason why the twisted form has to be isomorphic to the G-tensor M. But the whole point is that if you go to an extension, then E has a point. And the moment it has a point, then it's just the same than the trivial torsor. Okay? Okay, so that's one thing. So we're envious of the people that that do homology, because we have a long exact sequence, which is indeed not very long at all. So I will just give you an example. I mean, you have this so this is actually an exact sequence of groups over R, say, over Rn, over any ring. Notice that the naive definition of surjective is wrong. So surjectivity doesn't mean that when you evaluate at S, it surjects into S. Indeed, you could have an S where there is automorphisms which are not actually conjugation. Okay? But of course, that doesn't happen over fields. But out of this, we get something like this. And that's as far as we can go. I mean, there is some higher HIs, but they're actually quite complicated to understand. But you see, in this case, this is actually quite clear. So this is just the Picard group. It classifies line bundles. So the projective modules of rank 1. Now, what I'm going to tell you, it applies to GLM, GM is just GL1. So how do you think of this? Well, we can use that. So GLN is the group of automorphism of an object, namely the free module. I should just use R here. Is the free module of rank N over R. So these, we classify things that look locally like that. So these are just essentially vector bundles or projective modules of rank N over R. This map takes a projective of rank 1 and just puts it sort of diagonally. This map is very easy. So what is this guy? So what is PGLN? PGLN is the automorphism group of the matrix algebra. So these are, by the philosophy, these are just algebras over R that locally look like a matrix algebra. They have a name. They're called Asumasha algebras. And what this does, it takes M into endomorphisms of M. And this is in the sense of Grothendieck de Brouwer group. And you take an Asumasha algebra into its class in the Brouwer group, just as you do in field theory. Okay. Now, there is a case I'll cover them, I think, where the H1 is very easy to compute, and that is when you have something that is Galois. So if S over R is Galois, then so inside all the torsors, so the torsors are trivialized by some etal cover. So a Galois extension is an etal cover, and this just simply means the classes of torsors that are trivialized by that particular cover. So you can compute this just as you do in usual Galois cohomology. And by that I mean, so if you think of this, say, as matrices with entries in S, the Galois group acts on these entries, so acts on the group. You have the standard definition of cocycle, when two cocycles are cohomologous, and you can compute it the same way. And finally, the last ingredient is that we can twist G by E to get a new R group. So group scheme over R, if G is reductive, the twisted thing is reductive, because reductive is a concept that is trivial under base change and descent. So that's how you know the group. And again, I'm just going to give you, this is a crucial ingredient in non-abelian cohomology, but I'll just give you an example. Okay, so by now, many people in the audience should tell me how many elements are in that set. Okay, so we go back to the same business. I mean, these are just, PGL2 is a group of automorphisms. So these are just, or the matrix algebra, so these are just central simple algebras of dimension 4 over the real numbers, and there's only two. So if I now take PGL2 and I twist by this, I don't get anything, I just get PGL2. But if I twist by the non-trivial torsor or form, you get the real group SO3. Okay. Good. So what should I do now? So I cannot use this very much. I don't want, okay. So I'll proceed now with 5, but but I don't want to cover. Okay. Yeah. So I want to introduce two classes of torsors that are very relevant to ELAs. So I just said that, you know, if you look at things that are trivialized by a Galois extension, you can use there's a usual Galois cohomology. There is an object called the algebraic fundamental group, defined by Grothendieck, that captures the Galois group in the case of fields. So in this particular case, so it's denoted by pi1, we ought to fix what is called a geometric point, but we'll ignore that. And it has, it's very, very natural. So let me explain this. And this, of course, acts on these guys. So what is going on here? It's a beautiful theory. If we work, if we were in doing usual topology, and we just had, say, the n-dimensional torus, then the fundamental group will just be set n. But algebraically, you don't have the exponential map, and this is where the profinite completion comes into place. Essentially, this is taking care of all these extensions, which are all Galois, and you just look at all of them at once. While that is taking care of how the fundamental group acts on k-bar. In fact, there is a beautiful theorem called the comparison theorem that says that essentially if you have a nice complex variety and you compute the topological fundamental group and you compute the algebraic fundamental group, then the algebraic fundamental group is the profinite completion of the topological fundamental group. So the action in here is actually quite clear. So how would this act on something like this, for example? Well, this is just a compatible families of integers mod m, and this guy is a limit. So I just tell you how it acts on each of the pieces. Well, the Galois group will act there, and then this will act like this. Okay, so you can take now usual cocycles with coefficients in the group evaluated at k-bar, and this fits inside usual cocycles. And these are continuous cocycles. Whenever I talk about this, so they factor actually to some at the finite level. I mean, this is so they will factor over some z mod m z and some finite Galois extension. And here you have g evaluated at that guy. And in here, you will have all torsors. So what we proved with Philippe Gilles in 2007 is that this actually is equal. So this is what is called the isotriviality theorem. So essentially it says that over Rn, if you take a G torsor, then it's actually trivialized by a finite Galois extension. So I want to look at the torsors that actually come from here. And I'm going to call those toral torsors. Okay? Now, sorry, I want loop torsors, yes. I'm getting a set here myself. But loop torsors. So look what happens. So this is the thing that I think is crucial for the defining the right concept of ELA over non-closed fields. As we saw, when you have ELAs, everything is built from the cores. And we should have the analog of the cores over an arbitrary field. And Neher construction will go through. So what are the axioms, what are the things that we need to study down there? And if you look at the ABFP theorem, it stands to reason that what you should get should be multi-loop objects. But what is the concept of multi-loop if the field is not closed? And this is the correct, actually, this is the correct concept. In fact, if K is algebraically closed, then this piece goes away, and a loop cursor. So now there is no Galois group. This piece, which is set n, as you can see, acts trivially on k-bar, because there is no theta. So when you look at a guy in here, a cocycle is nothing but a continuous homomorphism from this group into here. But this is completely defined, but why you send the n generators, or forget the set, because it factors at a finite level. So it just gives you n elements of GK bar. G will be automorphism of G in the case of loop algebra. But the group is abelian, so these guys have to commute. And the homomorphism is continuous, so you have to factor at finite level, which means automorphisms are of finite order. So so these are the loop torsors, and the loop groups are groups over R, which are of the form GE. Let me call this G0, with G0 over R, so a split Chevalier group, a Chevalier. And you twist by a loop cocycle. Okay? And then the a toral torsor, this is the other ingredient, is the following. Is I mean, I just want to ask that the twisted group. So you have a torsor under G. So you can compute this group. It's some reductive R group. It may or it may not have a maximal torus. So you ask that it has a maximal torus. So these are the two key ingredients. So I think I'm ready to state the I may even finish it on time. The first theorem. So from now on, so we assume that G over K is an algebraic group. With the connected component reductive. Okay. So this is N7. So this is again showing work with Philippe Gilles. In progress, but we're almost finished. In fact, we started talking about this in March of 2000 at the Fields Institute. Yes, we had a semester on, that's when we met, yeah. So it only took us 11 years to finish, but it seems like we will. Anyways, so the first theorem says that, so here again, I mean, R is, well, maybe R. So, of course, this is not hard to prove. But what it says is, that these two things actually are the same. Now, I want, there are two theorems, and the proofs are over 100 pages long. There's not much I can see. I can just give you some ideas. This thing is based on work of Chernousov, Gill, and Reichstein, where they essentially show that if you have something that twists have a maximal torus, then actually this torsor comes from a finite subgroup of G. And once you have a finite subgroup of G, it's very easy to see that actually what you have is a loop torsor. This is much more delicate. And this, what it uses is a semilinear version of a very famous result of Borel-Mostow. So let me just give you what this picture would look at the multi-loop algebra level if we were over an algebraically closed field. So you would have this L, and when you go there, it splits. Okay, and you have these automorphisms, sigma, that commute, and they are of finite order. So what the Borel-Mostow theorem will tell you is that there is a Cartan of G that actually is stable under these guys. Okay, so now I look at that H, and I tensor with this. Now, L is obtained from G tensor this ring by Galois descent, where the Galois group, which in this case is just Z hat to the N, okay, acts via the automorphisms in G and via Z hat to the N on this guy. But you see, because H is stable under these guys, the action that I just described of the Galois group, the twisted action that by the same gives you L, actually stabilizes this RNM module. So it descends. It descends to something that exists over R, and it lives over L. It's inside L. What property does it have? Well, it's not difficult to show that locally is a direct summand, and it's absolutely trivial to show that if you go to any geometric fibers, you have a Cartan subalgebra in the usual sense. And this is the definition of what a Cartan subalgebra is in the sense of SGA3 for a Lie algebra over a ring. Okay? But we don't have a closed field, so we have to come up with a version of Borel-Mostow that allows for non-trivial Galois extensions. So what this gives you is so I think I will I probably will go for the we'll leave 2 minutes for questions, okay? I will finish by 12, and then if you have more questions, you can ask me later. But anyways, so these are the forms. So just to give you an idea of what it looks like, okay? So these are all the forms of G tensor R, okay? Now, the CAC smoothies are here. And the only thing that actually interacts with the things that we're talking about are the finite dimensional algebras and the affine algebras. So the rest of the CAC-smoothie algebras have absolutely nothing to do with what we're talking about. Then you have the multi-loops. And we've seen that every ECC, every centerless core of finite type or Rn, okay, is actually a multi-loop. So what's sticking out, if you look at the picture, are those two little boxes. But one of them is very well understood, the one that is at the ELA level. So these are the centerless cores, which are not of finite type. And they're essentially the ones that I told you at the beginning. But you have to take a quantum torus where at least one of the entries is not a root of unity. So let me just add, call Q generic. So they are perfectly understood. So the hope now is to try to classify these. Okay? And this is not understood at all, but it has nothing to do with ELAs. So these are forms which are not multi-loop. And one such example is so-called Margaux algebra. Now, what is very nice about this result is that it gives you, the multi-loop construction is somehow, I don't want to use the word artificial, but it goes outside the Lie algebra. I mean, it's you're sort of putting a gradient on the algebra. I mean, you have to somehow, you have the Lie algebra and you put a scaffold around it and you line it up. But this is completely internal. This is actually a theorem about the Lie algebra itself. It has a Cartan's of algebra. There is nothing external about it. So for example, the Margaux algebra does not have a Cartan's of algebra, but all the multi-loops do. Okay? And this actually is equivalent to being multi-loop and having a Cartan's of algebra is the same thing. What is missing is trying to find an internal characterization of the centerless cores. But anyway, that's at least this is some progress. And the second theorem that I want to tell you about so this is called acyclicity. And it says the following. So there is an obvious map. This is the, I lost my guy somewhere, but he was here. So this is the iterated Lorentz series field. So this is, it contains Rn, so there is an obvious phase change map. So you have that. But it's not injective. Now, it is surjective, though. Inside this thing, you have the loop guys. And what is beautiful, and just if you look at the picture that we had before, I mean, as far as ELA is concerned, these are the only torsos that actually matter. The theorem says that, okay, this is definitely not injective. For example, there is a multi-loop algebra and the Margaux algebra, and here they are different, and they go to the same guy there. Okay? But when you restrict the loop, the map is bijective. And the proof uses some sort of, it uses buildings. I mean, you get the Galois group to act on the building. You use Stitzel's fixed point theorem on the building to reduce the case to where you don't have any proper parabolic subgroups. Anyway, I'm not going to say much about the proof. Let me just tell you why it is relevant. It is relevant because this is kids' world, you know. I mean, you have a lot of things that you can use when you're trying to understand things over complete local fields. So that means, for example, that if we have a centerless core, we can attach a relative type, we can attach a fifth index, we can attach actions of the Galois group, we can attach a building. So it's a very, very useful thing to have. And I will finish by giving you an application. So let me classify. So let me assume that K is K bar, and let's classify R2 loop groups or two loop algebras. I mean, it's the same thing. So G is a joint. Okay, so R2 loop adjoint. This is the adjoint group corresponding to the Lie algebra. Okay, so we have this exact sequence. So F is F2, R is R2. Okay, so we have so these are the symmetries of the Dynkin diagram. This is the automorphism of G, which is exactly the same as the automorphism of the Lie algebra. So if you classify Lie algebras and groups, it's the same thing. And the connected component of identity is the adjoint group. Now, we also have this sequence. Okay, this is a simply connected group, but here is where it gets very nice, because we know there is something called search conjecture 2. Which is still a conjecture. So this says that if you have a field of cohomological dimension 2, for example, our F, then H1 of F with coefficients in a simply connected group is trivial. So that's still open, but we've proved it. I mean, anyways, it's true for Lorentz series in two variables. So what you get out of this is that in fact, this map actually is bijective. And we have a decomposition. Which comes from the exact sequence that wasn't very long. It's probably submerged somewhere. No. I don't know. Yes, it seems to be one. But so we have so H1 R odd G loop. is the same that H1, F, or G. Now, you can go to the outer part. You can take a class in there, and you can pull it back. And now you have to measure all of these classes. Now, if you take a class, it comes from here, and two things in here are going to go to the same thing if the outer group acting on this actually gives you the same class. But because of this magical thing over F2, when we are working over F, if you do what I just finished telling you, what you get is that this is the union of over E what G twisted evaluated at R acting on H1, H2. And of course, mu is very simple. Mu is just either a mu n or a mu 4 or a mu 2 cross mu 2, just as a center. So, and we can actually compute this. So let me just do maybe the most complicated case, which is if G is of type D4. So OG is S3, and mu is mu2 cross mu2. So there is everything is perfectly well understood, and what you get is the following. So this H2, in this case, it's just, I mean, there are two orbits. So you have the split thing, so there are two inner. Two inner forms. Then, when you twist, so here is twisted, of course. So let's go back to the philosophy again, because you would say, okay, for this guy in here, and this is true, it classifies Galois extensions of R with Galois group S3. But you can say, okay, what is S3 the group of symmetries of? And the answer is a set with three elements. And if you know the fact that when you have an Étale algebra and you tensor with a over a field and you tensor with a separable closure, you just get copies of the fields. This philosophy tells you that this guy actually is classifying Étale algebras of degree 3 over R2, and so you have the trivial guy, which is that, and that would give, because this H2 has actually two elements, that would give you two algebras. Then the twisted guy actually comes out to be Z2 mod Z2, and this group comes out to be Z2 mod Z2. So it can only act trivially. So what you have is you have the quadratic, an extension of degree 3 with S over R quadratic. So this gives you six algebras. One of them is quasi-split, because actually it's just you have the symmetry of the Zinkin diagram. And the other one is not, because the invariant in here is not trivial. And any quasi-split will give you a trivial Brauer invariant. And then the case that we thought would be most complicated of degree 3, we were very fortunate, because in this case, actually, when you do the calculation, this H2 vanishes. So, and there are four connected etal algebras over R2. So you have four of them, and they're all quasi-split. And this allows, I mean, the procedure is completely general for classifying in any nullity, but the calculations, of course, you know, only can be done in some case. And let me just finish by saying that at the end of the day, for example, you will be interested in knowing these algebras, not over R2, but say over the complex numbers. I mean, that's what people in this theory care about. And there is the classification, in fact, was done, or is under revision, by Bruce Allison, Steve Berman, and myself. And if you look at multi-loop algebras of absolute type D4, you will find out that this is done using these theory methods. There's only five of them. So what happens is that you could have algebras which are not isomorphic over R2, but when you read them as algebras over the complex numbers, they become isomorphic. And there's a beautiful way of recovering the classification over the complex numbers using this, but you cannot go the other way. And what happens is the following, is that the group GL2Z acts on this H1 by acting. You see, GL2Z is automorphisms of two variables. It's in there. And two things over R2 are isomorphic over the complex if and only if really you can go from one to another using that. And what happens in this particular case when you trace the action of GL2Z on the H1, what happens is that all of these guys, they collapse to one. I mean, so you end up actually with two algebras. I mean, the quasi-split and the other one over C is isomorphic to guy, and C is isomorphic to that. And these four, which were all non-isomorphic over R2, they all actually collapse to one. And those are the five algebras that you get over the complex numbers. Okay, I went 2 minutes over. My apologies. Thank you. So no time for questions. I really apologize. I think it's the first time in my life that I went over time, but anyway. Okay. You sure? Yeah. I thank you.